Interesting. Okay. One of the sort of things we've touched on, I guess, is this idea of kind of I guess we could use the term free markets. So if I speak out of turn here, Andrew, please correct me when you follow up the question. But this idea of free markets is a market that isn't underpinned or coerced by any other entity, but actually, as we already mentioned, I can exchange my bananas for your coconuts using a means of exchange if needed, or just a direct trade if we have the right quantities of these substances. This idea of kind of free markets, I think, it kind of feeds into what you mentioned about kind of individual liberty. And sort of libertarians tend to hold this view where we want the government to be as reduced as possible to be able to take care of sort of core components or core areas. And then we kind of see that obviously not being the case in the sort of societies that we live in today, especially in the US, Singapore, or here in the UK. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is this idea of individual liberty, free markets is far from where we are right now. Do you kind of see that's where we started and where we could get to, or has that always just been a dream held by Austrians in the School of Economics?
Emphasis on markets as uniquely happiness generating is not unique to the Austrians. This was an insight that goes all the way back to Adam Smith. In fact, one of the central questions of his classic book, this big tome he wrote that made him famous, it's called something something Wealth of Nations. People just call it Wealth of Nations. There's more. They're like one of these old school long subtitles, if I recall correctly. But anyways, the central question is, whence the wealth of nations? Why are some nations wealthy and others not? And his answer was markets. And in particular, it's that fundamental dynamic of people being better off when they both mutually benefit from a trade. And then you add to that things like comparative advantage and so on. So that's not unique to the Austrian school. It's an insight accepted by many different economists and kind of foundational to much of the discipline as we know it now. I do think that my own, I'm not, I'm a lover of liberty, but I'm not a libertarian. I think that at least within what we know of human experience, markets are at their best when there's still a state, because it's the state that enforces property rights, it's the state that enforces contracts. And those are the preconditions for safe, low cost, high certainty exchange without. There would be massive transaction costs if I had to have a bunch of hire a bunch of guys to have guns on you, making sure that you hand over the coconuts at the right time. No, we outsource all of that. That's the state. So, free markets are often sustained and enabled by states, but of course, states can go wrong, and they do. They often do. Maybe they inevitably do. So I see there being a dynamic, maybe that's just an eternal oscillation between liberty and tyranny, that we need a little bit of tyranny, that is a little bit of the state, to keep our shit together. Too much revolution, and you're back. Then you swing the pendulum to the other side. Now, obviously, that's a ridiculously simple view of human history, but I think we do see something like a cycle like that, and I wouldn't make any predictions on where we are in the cycle now, but I do believe that state authority has in many ways accelerated in our lifetime, and it's being enabled technically by things like the internet and cheap mass surveillance. And that's reason to think that the pendulum will accelerate in the direction of a state that is too large, that is too powerful, that is intervening too much and constricting human liberty. And I guess an inevitable consequence of that is something breaks and people don't like it, and revolution. Now, nobody wants revolution in their time. I'm not predicting or asking for that, but I would guess that that dynamic is in effect across many human societies and places and times. Does that seem right to you? What do you think? The pendulum idea with liberty and tyranny.
I think if we look again at Adam Smith and David Hume during their time, obviously there was a lot going on over in America at the time, or
Well,
the
yeah, it was
colonies.
1776 is when that's the publication date for Wealth of Nations. So yes,
It's
exactly
crazy.
at that time.
And obviously you kind of see this demand for liberty, for justice, for freedom, for to sh break off the shackles of the sort of empire's tyranny, the kind of England's empire, the Great British Empire, when we were once great. And there's this sort of, yeah, I think we see that played out time and time again. We could, even go further on to sort of looking at Rome or Greece or Egypt or wherever, and you see these things expanding and rolling and growing, and then kind of being kind of overthrown and curtailed, and then you see them taking a very, very long time to pull up the piece again. It's very rare that you get something like the US. Usually, you get a sort of broken state
The French Revolution,
distribution.
look what they got.
So yeah, I mean that definitely rings bells, as far as I can tell. But I don't know, you're obviously going to be more familiar with that time period in the US. So could you give us a bit more of an insight into how you think that maybe played out there?
Well, I think the Americans got fed up and they decided to self-liberate and to reverse engineer the political philosophy required to legitimate that. And in some ways, it required a little bit of reverse engineering, but in some ways, the seeds for that was already there, especially in the work of John Locke. So John Locke wrote his first and second treatises on government, and what he was trying to figure out was whether the Glorious Revolution of, what, 1650 or so was justified. So Oliver Cromwell, Charles I, beheading kings, and so on, could revolution be justified? And he thought the answer was at least sometimes yes. And the Americans, 75 years later, are thinking about, like, wait a minute, wait a minute. He said it's sometimes okay. Are the conditions met? So at the time of the American Revolution, Locke's second treatise on government was the most widely or second most widely read piece of literature after the Bible in the American colonies. So that fermented for years, and finally they said enough is enough and threw off the chains. I mean, obviously, I'm an American, you can tell from my accent. Even though I live in Singapore, I'm an American, so I'm giving you the American version of the story. Cast off their chains, self-decolonized, and became the first great former English colony. Of course, Singapore is another great former English colony, but here we weren't, we didn't have to cast off the chains so dramatically.